And on page 329, we learned yesterday three psukim. Let's now see the Malbim. The first pasuk tells us that Hashem is questioning, Hashem is upset at Klal Yisrael as to why they think foolishly that you can do whatever you want, you can do any avera you wish, and just bring a karbon and all is forgiven. Hashem proves here in this pasuk, in the next pasuk, that's incorrect. Because in the desert, the 40 years in the desert, Klal Yisrael offered to Hashem almost nothing. Only one karbon Pesach was offered, and nothing else. We had a discussion yesterday, did they offer the karbon tamid, the oilas hatamid? Two opinions. Even if they did, it was only offered by the Levim, not by the rest of Klal Yisrael. And in private karbonos, it seems, were very minimal, if none at all. And yet, although Klal Yisrael did not do very much in terms of karbonos, Hashem sustained them for 40 years. Malbim. The Malbim says, Hazavachim o mincha higashtem liv amidbar, mevi roya me'es hayoysam bamidbar. The pasuk is coming to bring a proof to the point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not have any interest in korbanos, because in the 40 years in the desert, arboim shanish lo hayolachem oz behemos harbe lekorbanos, v'yeinos linisachim. So here he introduces now a new point that no one mentioned, and is very shocking as to what he says, and that is, the reason why they did not offer sacrifices to Hashem in the desert was because they did not have animals. Now that's very disturbing, because who says they didn't have animals? The Bizas Mitzrayim, they offered a carbon Pesach. I mean, I really don't know.
But did they want the quail because they were hungry for meat?
Right. So that's one of the commentators. That's what disturbs me, because I cannot tell you quote chapter and verse, but I do remember one of the criticism that Klal Yisrael had was, you want meat, so go shecht your animals. They have plenty of meat. I remember the one that we were trying to mention that. So it would seem that they did have meat. I really do not know.
And before they divided the land, the main pot that was issued, the on Easter,
right.
on Jordan, because first they wanted to house the animals.
Exactly. Vnei God, Vnei Ruvein, they said, Miknerav Lohem. The pasuk explicitly says they had an enormous amount of cattle, and it was pasture land, and they wanted to settle there. It's explicit. Umiknerav. They had an enormous amount of cattle. So what does it? Does that mean they only had cattle at the end of 40 years, the last day? All of a sudden, the last 6 months when they were in the desert, all of a sudden their cattle multiplied, and until the point in time they had nothing? And if only they had Reuven and Gad, they had a lot, which implies that the rest of the Jewish people didn't have a lot, but they had, right? And even if you'll tell me they had nothing, so they can purchase from Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, there could have been some arrangement made where Gad and Reuven can supply the rest of the Jewish people. So this to me was shocking.
Not from here we learned that you have to take care of an animal first, and then yourself.
Well, no, that's a separate halacha. That when it comes to eating, you have to first feed your animals before you feed yourself. Drinking, you come first. But this is a very fascinating Malbim. What he says, I don't know that he doesn't give us a source. Maybe this is the source. It's not like what we thought. Maybe when it says of Mikne Rav, there was an abundance of Mikne for Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, it doesn't mean there was enough to bring Korbanos. There was enough Mikne for whatever they needed it for whatever. But for Korbanos, I really do not know. It's just very interesting to read what it says and to remember this Malbim, and how he attaches it to this Pasuk, which changes our understanding of the situation in the desert those 40 years. One more time, the words, Mevi roya me'es hayosem ha-midbar abam shanin shlo hoya lohem oz behemos harbe likorbanois v'yeinois linesachim. They didn't have? Okay, shocking statement. Unbelievable. It says it. No, wine is fresh wine. The wine they used for the Nesachim was 30 days old.
So they didn't have to
Okay, so maybe they didn't have wine. You're saying very good. Where were they at wine? Could they purchase grapes from the people? And they did purchase things from, it says in Chazal, from people that would pass through the desert. So they could purchase grapes. I don't know. Maybe so. If you don't have nesachim, it's not ma'akiv the karban. If you, just because you don't have the nesachim, you can still bring karbanos without the nesachim. It doesn't. It writes here the ikar avodasam hayimasha asu mishpatut staka. Amazing concept. What was the ikar mishpat? The ikar avoida that the Jewish people did in those 40 years was mishpat utzedaka. Like today, the zman hazen galus. What could we do today? We can't offer korbanos today. What could we do to serve Hashem today? Mishpat utzedaka. Doesn't say learn. Doesn't say work. It says mishpat. And it's a pasuk. He quotes a pasuk. Tzidkas Hashem asa. Mishpatav Moshe Rabbeinu, the very end of the Torah, the praise of Moshe, Tzidkas Hashem Asa'u Mishpatav Im Yisrael. It's an amazing insight that the Iker Avoida of Klal Yisrael in the 40 years of the desert was not to bring korbanos. They didn't have. The circumstances were such where they were unable to do so, and therefore this Avoida of Klal Yisrael was to do Mishpat Utzedaka. That's very good for us because we can't bring korbanos. So the least we should strive to do is to live a life. Mishpat is honesty. There should be.
I always thought Mishpat, Chayke Mishpat. It says in Mara there were certain mitzvahs that were given. Mishpat says Chazal, Kibbutz Avraham.
Okay.
Dinam.
So certain mitzvahs,
so Mishpat,
which we can do.
Mishpat.
Okay, in Echanami.
Mishpat
Utzedaka. This is what they did, and this is a saving grace what we can do. Okay, next, Pasuk Chavav. Unisasem es sikus malchachem. Now we go to the Nimgon. Rabbi Michal did some research. He's going to, let me just go through the Malbim, and then I'm going to present that. Then Michal will tell us what his research has yielded. But let's first see what it says in the Malbim. Unisasem choyz lemalam asher amar haloi choyshach yom Hashem v'loy ar ki oz tiglu b'gayla v'lo yu'ilu lechem akorbanos v'chagim. You're going to go into exile, and the korbanos and the chagim are not going to be of any value. Ki telchu b'gayla im ho'alilim shasisem unisasem es sikus malchachem she la'avoidas hamoylech. We learned in the Mitzudos and Rashi, the Sikus is just nothing more than a name of a god. We learned yesterday a beautiful parish in the Radak. Sikus comes from the word Haskes Ushema Yisrael. Hearken. Listen intently. So it means that you paid close attention to idols instead of paying close attention to Hashem's word. Okay, you study the manual of idolatry instead of studying the Torah. Instead of going to a Daf Yomi Shir, you went to a Shir on how to worship idols. Haskes. 400 Parakim of Masechta Avodah Zarah. But they learned it. They didn't learn it L'shem Shemayim. They learned it the wrong way. They learned how to worship al Sikus, a Sikus Malkechem, this that you hearkened to your idol that you accepted upon yourself as your king. That was a very interesting parish. And now we have over here a third parish from the Malbim. It means they made canopies. Tents. It was a big business. Today it's a very good business. If you're into tent business, you're in a very good business. People today are making tents all over the place for all different functions. So here it says they made tents. What was the tent for? The tent was to worship the idol. Look what it says there. How you oisim kimin sukois. Now first of all, he says that moilech malkechem. I don't think anyone said this yet. Is Moilach. Moilach is the famous idol that they would fire. They would pass their children through fire. And in some instances, they would actually burn their children in fire in honor of this god called Moilach.
I think all the time, that was the ritual, to burn the children.
I think it was different. Sometimes they would just pass. There were different madrigos.
This refers to that particular Moilach or not. I think we learned that.
They would play the drums to drown out the cries of the child. We learned that there were different levels of Moilach. Sometimes they did not burn their children. They just passed their children through fire very quickly. And then there were times when they did burn their children. They were all different madregois of Moilach. But no one yet has taught us in this pasuk that the word Malkichem is Moilach. Everyone said until either it's the name of a god or it means you accepted a God upon you as your king. No one yet has said, we are referring specifically to the idol called Molech. The Malbim is the first, at least for us on this page, that you've accepted Molech. Molech hayoisim kimin suk. And they, what did they do? What sukkos? They made canopies. They made canopies for this idol. K'mon shekasuv, Anshei Bavel, also as sukkos binos. Now, binos, I don't know what the word binos in this pasuk means. It means the name of a place, a certain type. I'm not exactly sure what the word binos in this pasuk means, but according to the Malbim, sukkos means a canopy. Next. Now, when it comes to the word, it came to the kiyun, this we learned yesterday. Parts, what was the significance? Okay, fine. So, what, and now we have kiyun, so we learned yesterday. We learned two perush. Either it simply means, it means a name of an idol, and then we learned the perush of the Radak. He cites other psukim that it refers to pastries, that in honor of worshipping certain gods, they would serve pastries, fresh pastries. You'll always get someone to come if you'll put up a sign that says fresh pastries will be served. So that's what they've done. That's what it means over here. Pastries made from dough. The reason why pastry is called a kavonim, it comes from the word kavana, which means literally precision. When you make pastries, you have to do it in a very precise way so that it should taste good. It should work out. In Yirmiya, the women would knead dough to make pastries in honor of worshipping the hosts of the heavens. They would make gingerbread cookies. Okay, animal crackers. Worship the animals. Okay, all the different types of creature, all different types of images are made in their food. They would have intent to fashion the pastry in the image of the star, a certain particular star, which they would attribute godly powers. The alze amar koichav Eloheichem, the koichav that is your God. V'gam luma shebetzeisam. And in contrast, shebetzeisam in Mitzrayim yashu basukois v'chaynasu es betzeikam term yechmatz yamlitz ki betzeisam yushalayim yisus sukois hamoylech uvatzeg shel kiyun hatzelam. This is awesome what he says here, which is totally shocking. And he says it's Hashem's poetic justice. Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, when I took you out of Egypt, what did I do for you? I put you in Sukkos. I put you kibbe Sukkos, hoshafti es b'nei Yisrael b'tzeisam me'eretz Mitzrayim. We celebrate the festival of Sukkos. And what did we do? We ate matzah. And the matzah is a reminder that when we left Egypt, that we left in such haste, there was no time for the dough to rise, for it to turn into chametz. Here, it's poetic justice. When we leave Egypt, when we leave Yerushalayim, Mitzesi, Mirushalayim, we're going to leave with the sukkos, with canopies that were made for the idols, and with the pastries that were made in the idols. The pastries correspond to the matzah, and the sukkos, the booths, correspond to the Anane HaKavod. So Hashem is saying to Klal Yisrael, oh, you want to worship idols? I took you out of Egypt to bring you to Eretz Yisrael, and I served you the Anane HaKavod, and I gave you matzah, and you have rejected my service? Okay, so you know what? You can have your version of the sukkos, and you can have your version of matzah, and when you leave Yerushalayim, Betzesim Yerushalayim, you'll take with you, the goyim will force you to carry on your back all the paraphernalia. You'll carry the sukkah in the basement. You have the panels, and you have the schach. You'll take it with you. You won't be able to take your gold and silver. You won't be able to take your chandelier. You won't be able to take all of your assets. But the goyim will insist that when you leave Mitzrayim, you should go down to the basement and take your sukkah and some pastries with you. Not the sukkah that you make for the Chag HaSukkah, but the sukkah that you have in your basement for the festival when you worship your idol, and you erect a tent in its honor. And the recipes and the pastries that you prepare when you worship the idol. And this will pain you. It will remind you. It will be Hashem's poetic justice. What about matzah? Whatever happened to Kippah Sukkos Hashavti Es B'nei Yisrael? Okay, this is a very powerful idea that the Malbim presents. The poetic justice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is paining us by reminding us what we have traded Hashem for. We've traded Hashem's mitzvahs for narishkeit. You like the narishkeit? So Hashem says, so you can have your narishkeit. Exactly. Okay, this Malbim is really unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now let's really hear, before we see Rabbi Chalk tells us what he came up with, let's just finish up with the Mamori Chazal. Mamori Chazal. No, wait, I'm sorry. There's one more Malbim. V'gleisiyas chamecholav l'damosek, kvar b'yarti l'mala, she'techilo higla miktsasam l'damesek, v'zelo hoyekosha b'ineim kol kach. Ki damesek hoyosamach l'gvulam, b'shagam shebimei Yerovam ben Yoash hoyo l'gvul Yisrael, at one point in time, it was even part of the borders. It was part of the Jewish, it was part of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, this parallels what we learned in the Radak. The Radak says that in previous times, when there was population relocation in the time of Aram, so the Aram, when he wanted to relocate you, he did not take you to a foreign land. He kept you, his term was, in the shchuna, in the neighborhood. If you lived in Borough Park, you were sent to Flatbush. That was torture. If you were in Flatbush, they sent you to the Five Towns. That was torture. If you were in the Five Towns, they put you in Williamsburg. That was really bad. And you know what the worst was? If you were in Monroe, they sent you to Canarsie. This was torture. However, Hashem says it's not going to be so good. It's not going to be so easy this time. This time you're going to be sent out of the country. You're going to be sent from Eretz Yisrael to a new land, to Ashur, where you totally have no familiarity with it whatsoever. So until now, it was Damesek. Now the key word of the Malbum, and the key word that we learned yesterday in the Radak is Vamehola. It's not going to be like it was in other times. Times not that long ago when the Melech Aram flexed his muscles and he exiled the people from the main part of Eretz Yisrael too. Damesek, he's going to exile you. Mehola l'damosek, it's going to be much, much more painful. Okay, now let's take a look at the Mamor Chazal, back on page 328. The pasuk comes v'achim mincha yigashtem li b'midbar arboim shana, the very bottom, Likutei Shas 328. V'achim mincha yigashtem li b'midbar arboim shana beis Yisrael, Tanya. Okay, just reviewing what we learned yesterday, these things that we're going to read now, is just the actual Mamori Chazal that the Radak emphasized. Most of this comes straight from the Radak. I mean, the Radak took this basically from these Mamori Chazal. Tanya, it says in the pasuk in Parshas Pinchas, we say in the Parsha of the Korbanos, Tanya Oilas Tamid, the carbon oila that is offered continuously, Ho Asuya Behar Sinai, which was performed on Har Sinai. Question over here is really? Is it really true that the mitzvah of the oila, the offering of the oila, began on Har Sinai and never starts? Tamid. Once it starts, it never stops. Is it really true? Ho'as Suya means it was performed, it was enacted, and it started and never stopped for the remaining 40 years in the desert? So it's machlokes. We learned this all yesterday. Rabbi Eliezer Oimer, Ma'aseha. Dine hakravasa nemru b'sinai. Rabbi Elazar said, Oimer, ma'asecha. The word ha'asuya should not be translated that it was, like I said, performed. It was not actually done. No one offered korbanos on Har Sinai. They were korbanos. The Na'arim offered zvachim, but the carbon tamid was not actually done. What does the word ho'asuya mean? It means, as he translates, the editor added in two words over here, the laws, the dine hakravasa, the laws of its offering. its performance, what should be done, exactly how it should be done, all of the details of the Karban Tamid was taught, transmitted to Klal Yisrael on Har Sinai. When did it first begin? When they entered into Eretz Yisrael. But vehi atzma, according to Rabbi Elazar, loy karva b'sinai. This is the shita of Rabbi Elazar. Along comes Rabbi Akiva. He disagrees. Rabbi Akiva Imer, karva, it was offered. Vishuv loy paska milakviva b'midbar, because it says in the pasuk tamid, once it started, never stopped. So what's the question? We say this pasuk every day in davening, in korbanos. The question is, that pasuk is contradicted with what we learned today. What it says here in Amos, Perek Hey, pasuk Chaf Hey, it says, Hazavachim u'mincha, higashtem li ba'midbar arboim shana beis Yisrael. Did you offer me any korbanos? The simple translation of this pasuk indicates that they did not offer any korbanos in the desert for 40 years. This is a head-on contradiction to Rabbi Akiva that says, Ho'asuya Bahar Sinai means it started, it was performed, it was done, and it never stopped. How then will Rabbi Akiva answer this contradiction? So how could he say this? V'shuv amar ela mo ani mekayim hazvachim u'mincha higashtem li v'amidbar arboim shana beis Yisrael. Answer is, Shifta Shalevi. It means only a very small segment of the Jewish people offer the korbanos, the korban tamid, only Shevet Levi, because they were not sinners. They did not worship the Egel. Now, before we go further, this is a very fascinating idea. From this Rabbi Akiva, it's mashma that there were plenty of animals. There was no shortage of animals. The only ones who offered the carbon was Shevet Levi. Now the Radak elaborated upon this idea. He said something which doesn't say in the Gemara, but this is what the Radak said. The reason was because only Shevet Levi merited to be permitted to offer because they did not participate in the Egel. As Moshe said, Mi LaHashem Eli. And who came forward? B'nei Levi. B'nei Levi had nothing to do with the Egel. Klal Yisrael, the remainder of Klal Yisrael, we know from Chazal, did not necessarily participate in the actual worship of the Egel, but they tolerated it. Chazal tell us, it seems not. That's what it seems. I don't know. It's hard to make these distinctions, but according to what the Radak seemed, they did not tolerate it. They protested. That's the impression you get. The exact details, I really don't know. But the impression you're getting by putting all the pieces of the puzzle together is the Erev Rav worshipped. They offered sacrifices. We learned yesterday they actually gave the mon. They took the mon that Hashem gave them and offered the mon as a gift offering to the Egel. They danced. They danced around it. They were mecholos. There was dancing. The remainder of Klal Yisrael did not offer sacrifices, did not dance, but was tolerant. They watched. They stood at a distance and they watched and they did not lodge any protest. Levi, it appears, did protest. That's the impression you get. They were silenced. They were silenced by the Erev Rav. Maybe they were silenced by the rest of Klal Yisrael. So you have three levels. The Erev Rav, Klal Yisrael, the majority, and Shevet Levi. Erev Rav were killed. Those who worshipped were killed. That's what it says in the pasuk. Moshe Rabbeinu came along and he wiped them out. The rest of Klal Yisrael, we suffer ad hayayim hazav, yom pokti pokadati. Levi, Shevet Levi, according to the Radak, merited to, because they did not participate at all whatsoever.
Not just because they didn't participate, but because they took action.
They protested, and they took action to be the people who wiped out, who obliterated the sinners. They merited to offer the Karban Tamid for 40 years. And no one else. No one else. No one else had a portion. What about the Machzis HaShekel? Maybe they didn't give Machzis HaShekel during these 40 years. That's what it seems to say. the carbon talmid comes from the funds of the entire Klal Yisrael, not shave, not in this case. The 40 years, according to the Radash, the way Rabbi Akiva answers, it takes this pasuk, they only shave at Levi. Now that is a revelation that if a person, let's say in modern day, modern times, is an idolater, he does veros, let's say you can say are equivalent to worshipping idols, it would appear if you take this to its full conclusion, does not have a chelek in the carbon tamid. And even though Bezman has said we do not offer a carbon tamid, but the tefillos of Klal Yisrael, uneshalma forim sifoseinu, the fact that the entire Klal Yisrael every single day davens shachris, this to a degree is the offering of the Tamid Shal Shachar. The fact that the entire Klal Yisrael as a whole offers the Tamid Shal Ben Harbayim, davens mincha, is to a degree a public offering of the Tamid Shal Ben Harbayim. A person who is considered an idolater does not have a chelek, a portion, a merit in that zechus of Klal Yisrael. If not for this, you would say, why not? You would argue, why can a person, let's say a person is not necessarily a shomer Torah u'mitzvos, a person is not 100%. So what? The fact that Klal Yisrael as a whole, every single day, daven shachris and mincha, the vast majority of shomer Torah u'mitzvos are davening every day shachris and mincha, and Chazal tell us in the Shalma Forim Sifoseinu, this is the equivalent of the Tamid Shal Shachar and the Tamid Shal Bein Harbayim. And everyone else in Klal Yisrael latches on, has a chelek in that offering. But here we're learning from this Radak and this Maamar Chazal, not necessarily. In the desert, the Tamid Shal Shachar was offered for 40 years. But do you know who got a portion, who to whose credit it was attributed? Only to Shevet Levi. Not to everyone else, the remainder, because Shevet Levi did not worship the eagle. Everyone else did. There are consequences. And the consequences are, you do not have a chelek in this carbon. Why not? Ner le'echad, ner le'meya. If Shevet Levi is offering the Tamid Shel Bein Harabayim, Ho'asuya behar Sinai, it's no worse than the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Who offers the carbon Tamid Shel Bein Harabayim? 13 Kohanim? The Mishnah Masechta Tamid that enumerates, goes through the details exactly how it was done. So they bring the Tamid Shel Bein Harabayim, and you have 15 million people in Klal, so everyone has a chelik in the carbon Tamid. So what's the big deal? Shevet Levi brings the carbon Tamid Shel Bein Harabayim, so there are 600,000 other people, there are 3 million people in Klal Yisrael, they don't get a chelik in the Tamid Shel Bein Harabayim. What's the big deal? Ha'asuya Bahar Sinai. If it's being done, it's being done. And yet this pasuk says, Ha'zavacha Mincha Ha'gash Tamid Bein Harabayim Shana Beis Yisrael, Hashem says, no, you don't get any credit. It wasn't for you, it's for them. No, Mach Shekel was given immediately. Mach Shekel was given to bring the was given Kisisa was given even before they built the Mishkan, I believe. Before Bahar Sinai was the Bukharim, correct.
So Hashem should have withdrawn it from them also, no? They brought it for 50 days, Karmotam and Har Sinai.
Who says they brought it 50 days? Who says they brought it 50 days? It's not clear what they did on Har Sinai, but according, let's not go into too many details. Don't confuse me with the facts. Let's focus on the basic yesodos. The Gemara says, it says in the pasuk, Hasuya behar Sinai. It was done. Rabbi Akiva says, that's right. The word Hasuya is to be translated literally, it was done. And it never stopped. But the pasuk here in Omar says it was not done. A contradiction. Rabbi Akiva answers, it was done by Levi, Shevet Levi, but it did not go to the credit of the rest of Klal Yisrael. Why not? So it says in the Gemara. Why not? Well, we learned yesterday in the Radak, because the rest of Klal Yisrael were considered to be Oivdei Avodah Zarah. They worshipped the Egel. And it took 40 years for Hashem for them to die, basically, until they all died. And then the new generation, they already had a chelik in the carbon Tamid Shel Bein Harabayim. So who gets credit? So the pasuk that says Hasuya is Levi, and this pasuk is Klal Yisrael because they were over the Avodah Zarah. Wow! That's a chiddush. If not for this chazal, I would say, even if you're an ovid of the zara, the carbon goes for you anyway, right? You're part of Klal Yisrael. You're part of Klal Yisrael, so you know you have to do teshuva. There are things that you have to do, but at least I'm part of Klal Yisrael. The carbon sibush should work for me as well. And here chazal are telling us it does not. And that's a frightening revelation, because in today's day and age, even the 21st century, it's very relevant. Because Klal Yisrael as a whole has merit. And not every individual is able to do everything that you're supposed to do. That's a reality. Not everyone has the opportunity to daven, to spend 3 hours davening shacharis. Not everyone can spend even 45 minutes davening shacharis. Not everyone can go to a minyan. Not everyone can do everything. But Klal Yisrael as a whole is serving Hashem. An individual who's unable to do everything 100% is able to latch on to the tzibur. And here you have an example where Hashem is saying, I'm sorry, you're not. I'm not going to consider it that the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash will go to your credit. And who are we dealing with? We're dealing with the Yoytzei Mitzrayim. We're dealing with very holy people, people we can't even fathom who these people were, the Yoytzei Mitzrayim. And yet Rabbi Akiva is telling us they did not get credit for the Tamid Shel Bein Harboi Shel Shachar. Why? The Radak, his chiddush, is because they were Oiv the Avodah Zarah. It was only Sheva Levi that Moshe said, Mila Hashem Eli. Unbelievable. What's left for us today? Yes.
Also, Rabbi, I was going to say, you're raising a very interesting point. Because I was thinking, in some ways, the non-religious Jews wouldn't technically be surprised by what you're saying, because they would assume, if they reject our rituals and our way of keeping the Torah, then they wouldn't assume they need to share in it. But what they might say is, if I pray to God, I'm a good person. So then I would ask, don't we have the concept that, like, if you do a avodah zarah, then yeah, Hashem excludes you, God forbid. But if you do one thing, one mitzvah, one tefillah, if you say to Hashem in the privacy of your heart, Hashem, I need you, Hashem this, then that is where you create the connection.
Okay, that's true, that's true. You cannot generalize. Avodah zarah is a very general concept. Avodah zarah, you're asking a very good question, and you cannot generalize. I'm just talking about an extreme case. A person who completely rejects, knowingly rejects what he knows to be true, he's in trouble. He cannot come back and later on say, I rejected, but still I'm part of the Klal. I'm a member, I'm a card-carrying member of Klal Yisrael. I should at least get some benefit. No. If you want out, you can never become that. You can never leave Klal Yisrael. It's impossible to become the person, Rachman son, the baptized. It means nothing. It means absolutely zero. But yet, the merit of the tzibur does not necessarily help an individual that does not want a share or has rejected knowingly. There are many levels. There's a tinek shen nishba. There are people who don't know better, people who are good people. Of course, that's not what we're discussing. Yeah, I'm hope. Okay, now let me listen to the Maamar Chazal. Let me listen to the Maamar Chazal. Yeah?
Which carbon? Only the Tamid?
Well, we learned.
If you think about it, the Avaryanim are the ones who need the carbonos.
If they didn't offer the carbon Tamid, it's not likely they offered anything else, because the carbon Tamid is the fundamental. It's the fundamentals, it's the basics. If they don't offer the basics, it's not likely they offer all of the other carbonos, which are bonus carbonos. They're limited, and they're bonus, like they call it bonus karbanos. This is the basics. Okay, let's see the next chazal. Next chazal, it says, Hilchot Shabbos Chagiga v'Hamilos, Ha'areihem k'ha'arorim atlim b'sa'ara. The laws of Hilchot Shabbos. Hilchot Shabbos is so complex. Where does it say in the Torah? All these laws, the lamites melochais, and all of the minute details, doesn't sit anywhere in the Torah. Nowhere. It just says, l'sasikol melocha. What does it say this? So Chazal say, you're right, these are mighty mountains. And the laws of Chagigos, Chagigos means the Korbanos, Chagigos means the laws of the Korbanos, of all the minute details, the Hami'ilos, the laws of deriving benefit from Kachim. These laws are not mentioned, the details of these laws are not mentioned in the Torah in the details. Ha'areihem, they're like ha'ararim, they're like mighty mountains, ha'tuluyim ba'sa'ara, that is suspended by a thin hair. So, They're mighty things, and we're only able to find very, very minor, small connection to psukim, nuances of expression in the Torah to allude to very lofty halachas. Basically, it's halacha l'moshe mi-sinai, it's Torah she-baal peh. Now, what do we want with this? Shehi mikra muat v'halachas merubois. Now, he gives examples. Chagigos, michtav, you gave three examples. You have Shabbos, Chagigos, and Milos. What a set, what a team. From all the possible mitzvahs that you can say that you can apply this principle to, why don't we say this about tefillin? I would think the first candidate for this concept would be tefillin. Tefillin, all of the halachas, how to even write the aleph beis. Where does it say anywhere how to write the letters of the aleph beis? Nowhere. Where does it say? There are libraries of Sfarim teaching you the Tsuras Ha'osiyos, L'chol Pirotecha V'tiktukev V'chavsecha, to be a Sofer, to get a Ksav Kabbalah, to be a Magia. You know how much you have to learn, how you have to study, how much Shemesh you need just to learn the letters of the Aleph Beis? Where does it say all this in the Torah? Everything is Halacha L'moshe Mi-Sinai. The Tillin, what they look like, how they're shaped, how they're formed. Where does it say this? Halacha l'moshe mi-sinai. So you can apply this principle. They're like mighty mountains, hatalim ba-sa'ara, in so many different areas of halacha. So why then did Chazal pick these three? And that's really what the Gemara is asking. When it comes to chagigos, the laws of a carbon chagiga, the laws of the Moadim, when you bring a carbon chagiga, it's not a big deal. Michtav kisivon bimifayrash. In the brackets, the editor added in some words. It's explicit in the Torah. It says, v'chagoysim ha'yisoy chag l'Hashem. The Gemara says, no, that's not what I meant to say. What I meant to say over here is, l'tzricho l'chdo omar l'erav papa l'abaye, mimai d'chay v'chagoysim ha'yisoy chag l'Hashem, hakavon l'zvicha dilma choygu chaga. It means rejoice, ka'amar rachmona. In other words, Hayharbu b'simchas regel. We translate the word v'chagoysim oisei chag l'Hashem lehalacha to mean a person has an obligation to bring what is called a korban chagiga. A korban chagiga is like a korban shalomim. You eat it. You eat the most of the korban. You give part of it is burnt on the mizbeach, and you eat it in Yerushalayim with your family. A korban chagiga is basically a korban shalomim. Who told you the translation of v'chagoysem oisoy chag l'Hashem is a korban chagiga? Maybe the translation v'chagoysem also you shall celebrate the festival chag as the festival l'Hashem. Come together with your family, take off from work, have a nice meal, have some divrei Torah, have zmirois. Whoever mentioned a requirement to bring a sacrifice, where does it say this anywhere in the Torah? Who gave you the right to invent a new carbon called carbon chagiga? And the answer is, Ela Osya, we make a gzereshava, midbar. It's an amazing thing. We make a gzereshava, midbar, ksiv hacha, v'yachoygu li ba-midbar, you shall celebrate for me in the desert. That's what it says about one of the festivals. Uchsif about Pesach, it says that. V'yachoygu li ba-midbar, it says about that Moshe Rabbeinu, he told Paro that we're going to leave Egypt, we're going to make a celebration, a chag, in the desert for 3 days, and we're going to come back. And it says the two words are juxtaposed, Chag v'yachogu li ba midbar, in the desert. And it says this pasuk that we have learned today, the pasuk of Hey, Uchsiv Hasam, it says Hazvachim umincha higashtem li va midbar. And in the context of this pasuk, the word ba midbar is referring to Hashem's criticism. Did you offer sacrifices to me in the desert? So we see that the context of this pasuk, the midbar is used within the context of korbanos. That is a gezerish. It's a drasha, a gezerishava. When it says v'chagoysem li b'midbar, the word chag is associated with the word midbar, and midbar is associated with the word with korbanos to teach us a drasha, a gezerishava misinai that it refers to korbanos malal and zvachim afkan zvachim. So this is a very important, critical halacha. This, what we learn today, you never know, right? You learn Amos. Whoever heard of Amos? Who is Amos? Whoever heard of Sefer Amos? But you learn Sefer Amos, you learn over your pasuk. This pasuk is mamish the makar, the source, that on a festival, you have an obligation to bring a karbon chagiga. It's all over Shas. A karbon chagiga. Where does it come from, a karbon chagiga? It comes from the word v'chagoysem oisoy chag l'Hashem. The word chag means chagiga because of a gezerah shava. The chagoysim also chag l'Hashem. Gezerah shava hazvach l'mincha higashtem li b'midbar. Okay.
Communal
offering? No, individual, family. Everyone should eat a kezayis of meat of a carbon oil, of a carbon shlamin. On the fest, on the sholosh regalim, you have an obligation to eat besar kodesh, the meat of a carbon shlamin, called the carbon chagiga. That's in addition to the obligation of bringing a carbon oila, oila sri'ia. Every one of the three festivals, the person is required to bring two korbanos, a carbon oila, completely burnt, a burnt offering, and to bring, to participate, to eat meat. You don't have to bring it yourself, but you have to eat a kazayas of meat from a carbon shlamim, which we call on the festivals when you bring l'shem the chag, called the carbon chagiga.
If they were lined up, the Beit HaMikdash, and then
you have to eat. You don't have to be in the Beit. A carbon chagiga is kachem kalim, which means you can eat it anywhere in Yerushalayim.
Where could you
only in the Beit HaMikdash.
In the Midbar,
they were allowed to shecht, yes. Well, this was before Ma'antar. This was Moshe Rabbeinu telling Paro, we want to go make a, this is before Ma'antar. Moshe says to Paro, let us go. We want to go and celebrate in the desert, the Chag L'Hashem, for 3 days. Okay, that was a one-time deal. That was a one-time thing that happened in the desert.
During the 40 years.
So, what? No, there were no, during the 40 years, the Mishkan, it seems the Mishkan had the status. There was not a bum. The Mishkan was called, was in the Shas Isra Bamas. When they came into Eretz Yisrael, then Bamas were permitted for 14 years. The Mishkan in Eretz Yisrael was called the Bama Gedoy, was called the Bama Gedoyla. I don't know the terminology. It was called the Mishkan. It was called the Mishkan. And Bishas, the time when there was a Mishkan, it was forbidden for an individual to offer a carbon on a private altar. When they came into Eretz Yisrael and they settled in Gilgal, then bamos were permitted for the next 14 years. When they then erected the Mishkan in Shiloh, it was forbidden to offer on private bamos for 369 years. When Shiloh was destroyed, then they had a Mishkan in Noiv and then in Givon for 57 years in total. And during those 57 years, private altars were once again permitted. And then when they moved and they built the Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, it's over. Then it became forbidden to offer korbanos on bamos forever. That was the end. And all of the kings had a very, very difficult time convincing Klal Yisrael to get rid of the private bamos. Ach ha-bamos loy hesir. All of the kings, when it talks about their legacy, what are their accomplishments, so it says they did this, but unfortunately, the bamos, they were unsuccessful.
They weren't allowed to eat meat at all? No,
it's called besar taiva. You're allowed to eat besar chulin. You can eat chulin meat. You can eat regular meat, like today, no different than today. You have empire. No, empire only doesn't have meat. The empire only has the birds, poultry. But meat. You can eat meat, a chulin. But if you want to eat holy meat, kodesh meat, then you have to go to the Beis HaMikdash and bring a korban shalomim, and then the meat you eat will be called besar kodesh.
And the bamos was considered holy meat?
Yes. The bamos, now there's a very big question. What exactly did they offer on the bamos? There are different opinions. I don't know the details. It could be that according to one opinion, the only thing they offered on the bamos were oilos, not shlamim. I don't think they offered shlamim on the bamos. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember. But the bamos were for private offerings. A bama just is just a mizbeach. The only requirement it has to be perfectly square, and has four corners. Okay, corner, that's it. There's no size. Obama, no Obama? They claim it's Obama? A huge one?
The Jewish Museum on.
Rabbi Deutsch.
No, in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Upper East Side.
They have Obama, they brought above Eric Troll.
Many years ago.
Square? Is it square?
With horns.
With horns. And they claim this is an inch Obama?
That's what they claim.
Okay, could be. Who knows?
Huge. But it's just a side question. Hashem had told Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Paro.
Yeah.
They should release them for 3 days.
So Hashem
stands for Amos. They had no intention of coming back after 3 days.
All of the commentators asked that question. They all discussed that. How could it be that? What exactly were they planning to do for 3 days? Right. To the end, you have to look at the Mefarshim. Look at the Mefarshim in that passage. Everyone asked that question. Mm-hmm. Everyone asked that question, and they. There are different answers.
Some brothers have a very interesting history of being very much beloved and very much hated by Hashem. It's an interesting thing,
Rabbi Klein, in his new book, he has on idolatry, has a very, very big, discussion about the Bamas. He talks a lot about the Bamas and why were all the kings unsuccessful. We discussed this at different points in time. The Bamas, it's a very big topic in of itself. It's not for now. Let's one more Chazal, and then we have to hear from Michal. One more Chazal, Pasuk Chav Zayin, the next page 330. One more Chazal says over here, V'iglesi eschem mehalal l'damosek, Rebbe Nochmai Oimer, Mishum Rebbe Yeshua, Haray Oimer, Koyama Hashem, Kasher Yatzel Haray Mipicha, Ari, Shtei, we had this not so long ago, Paragimel, I'm sorry, I didn't finish yet?
Yeah.
I did that. We just spent a lot of time with that. I'm the chag. We just spent half an hour on that. The Chadach Hazal is the question. The Chagiga. There are three major. They give three examples. Shabbos, Chagigos. I read the whole thing. I read all the words.
On the
other
side.
Are you talking about
Korban Pesach? Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. I didn't finish. Oh, you're right. The next page. You're right. Are you referring to Mr. Rappaport? Yes. Are you referring to page 329? Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize to you. You're right. I made a mistake. I did not finish it off. You're right. I didn't see. Page 329. Please forgive me. Umay kehararin hatluyim basar. What does it mean? It's like a mountain that's spent by here. Divrei Torah medivrei Kabbalah lo yalfinan. Why does the Gemara say, Shalom Aleichem? There's on top of here. On top of it. On page 329. Why do Chazal call this to be a suspended by a hair? This is a legitimate gezerah shava. It says in the pasuk, "V'chagoyisem lichag laHashem." V'chagoyisem pasuk is v'chagoyisem oso chag laHashem. How do we know the word chag means a carbon chagiga? Maybe it means a festival with good food, good drink, celebration, good music. How do we know that it means a festival? Gezerah shava. It says here the word chag. It says in the word in Shemois Hey V'yachoygli Bamidbar. The word Chag is associated with the word Midbar, and it says in Sefer Amos the word Midbar has Zavachim Umincha Higashem Li Bamidbar. So just like here it says Midbar and it refers to Korbanos, so too in Shemos when it says Midbar and it's associated with the word Chag, it means a Korban. So it's a beautiful Gezeirah Shava. Why does the Gemara say it's like a mountain, a mighty mountain suspended by a hair? This is not a hair. This is a solid rope. This is a chain. This is a very significant connection. It's a Gezeirah Shava. So the Gemara says something which is very controversial, and that is, when you make a Gezeirah Shava, it has to be in-house. Only within Chamisha Chumshei Torah. To take a pasuk in Chumash, a word in Chumash, and to make a gezeirah shava to Nevi'im? No. That is a violation of the Yud Gimel Midah Torah Nidreshes. Really? Is that really a violation? I'll show you many examples in Shas where the Gemara does just that, and the Gemara does not say that it's suspended by a hear. So obviously, there are different types of gezeirah shavas. There are different types of This is a study in and of itself. When do we say this principle? Divrei Torah, mi divrei Kabbalah, lo yalfinan. Divrei Kabbalah means Nevi'im. Nevi'im is called Divrei Kabbalah. A Gezerah Shav is in-house. Torah to Torah, not Torah to Nevi'im. Nevi'im Divrei Kabbalah. And that's why it's called suspended by a hair. It's not a real Gezerah Shavah. It's a make-believe Gezerah Shavah, but it's good enough. It's good enough. What? An illusion. That illusion is so significant that you have an obligation to bring a karban. You have a whole mesechta chagiga, based upon a drasha that's not a real drasha. It's a drasha that's a make-believe drasha. Because gezeirah shav from pasuk chumash to pasuk in divrei kabbalah. So the Gemara says no. That's in divrei term, divrei kabbalah lo yalfin. That's why it's only called suspended by a hear. Now again, you have to take this with a grain of salt, because there are many instances in Chazal, in Shas, where Chazal are not embarrassed, and they do make a Gezeirah Shav, they make multiple drashos by learning things from Divrei Nevi'im. Today, when we do part 3 of the Shir, I'll give you such one example. Okay, we'll talk about today. Are you allowed to date? Today is the beginning of the new fiscal year. It's 1/1/19. Okay, 1/1/19, right? The first month, the first day of the year 2019. 19 plus 1, and 1 is 21. Ach, toiv v'chesed. Yir defuni kol yimei chayai. Okay, ach. Are you allowed to say 1/1/19? It says in the Torah, ha-chodesh hazeh lochem roish chodoshem. So I'll show you soon that is a pasuk in Yirmiyah that says no more. It says, "Lo yoimar oid chai Hashem asher helav asher hevi es bnei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. Elo yoimar chai Hashem asher helav asher hevi me'eretz mid'eretz Safa me'eretz Dorah." Now we'll read the pasuk later on, and from that, some of the Rishonim learn that the mitzvah of Hachodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodashim is batal. The prohibition to count from Chodesh Nisan was only until Yirmiyah's time. Yirmiyah, that's Divrei Kabbalah. Yirmiyah changed the whole equation. And we accept that to a degree. So you see that there are many significant things that we do learn from Divrei Kabbalah that override what it says that we learn Divrei Halacha. Okay, we have to discuss that later on. But so we have over here a very big, we have over here, this is a very controversial statement of the Gemara, what the Gemara is saying this, because the Gemara does appear to contradict itself numerous times by learning basic principles of halacha from Divrei Kabbalah. Let's just leave it with that. Let's finish up the next Chazal. V'yasuk sa Pesach b'Rishon b'Arba'ah. They offer the Pesach b'Rishon b'Arba'ah on the b'Arba'ah Asar. Okay, and on the 14th day, at least at the next word, b'Arba'ah. Bignus Yisrael HaKadosh, we learned many times in the Rashi, in all the Mefarshim quote of this Gemara. This pasuk is discussing the gnus, is the, what was the word you had yesterday? The shame of the Jewish people. Bignus Yisrael HaKadosh, B'dabesh, also El Pesach Zebelva. This was the only Karban Pesach they offered in all 40 years. How do you know this was the only Karban Pesach? Who says, Mehechatesa? What we learned today. This pasuk we learned today is really it's a fundamental pasuk. There are so many yesodos, so many things we've come across in the last 2 days learning this pasuk that fundamentals and basic yados from this pasuk over here. Whoever would know? Whoever would even heard of the sefer called Sefer Amos? And we learn over this pasuk so many fundamental things. Hazvachem u'menachas yikashli b'midbar b'mshon beis Yisrael. They only offered one Karban Pesach, and that pasuk refers to the gnuson shel Yisrael. Okay, next Chazal, next page. Page 330 on the bottom. Look at the Shas. V'glesi eschen mehalo l'damosek. Rabbi Noharoi Omer. Mishum Rabbi Yeshua. Haroi Omer. Koyamar Hashem. Kasha yatzil haroi'e mipi hori shtei chira'ayim oi vidal oi zen. So we learned that there's going to be this pasuk. There are many perushim what this pasuk means. If you remember not that long ago, we learned this pasuk in detail. But according to the general gist is that there are going to be very few survivors. When Sancheriv exiles the Jewish people, the vast majority of them are going to be lost. Who will survive? Just a teeny, teeny fraction. It's like a shepherd who his flock is under attack by a wolf or a lion, and what is he able to salvage? He's able to salvage just a little small amount, like he's able to salvage the lobe of the ear, the bone of the ear, because the bone of the ear is not tasty to a lion. A lion doesn't like the earlobe or the bone, whatever, the cartilage of the ear. So the lion leaves it over. So the shepherd's able to salvage the kirayim, the legs. The legs do not have, it appears that the legs do not have meat, whatever it is, this part is not tasty to the lion, so the lion leaves it over. But it's insignificant, it's not the main part of the animal. That was the gist of the pasuk. So he over here, the Chazal tell us, Elu mikol Yisrael, Elu mikol Yisrael bepas mita, and then it goes on to say further, he's quoting the end of the pasuk, bepas mita, and it gives another metaphor. It'll be like the corner of the bed. The corner of the bed means just the bed. There are many different parts to the bed. And if the bed, the bed, just a segment, a very small, insignificant part of the bed will survive. Klal Yisrael is mitosai shlema. We had different perushim when we learned this pasuk back a few weeks ago. Klal Yisrael Yaakovin, Yisrael al roish hamita. The mita represents the shlemus of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael will no longer be shalem. There'll only be the corner of the bed. Most of Klal Yisrael will go into galus and will be lost. From this that Yaakov Avinu said, Vayishtachu Yisrael Rosh HaMita, all that we will have is the pas HaMita, the corner of the bed. So here he blamed, Shelo Nishtairu Vohen Ele Echad Mishmoina, 1/8, Shebohen. Why the corner of a bed? Because a bed, a corner has two parts. A corner is a right angle. How many right angles are there? How many parts to the right there are there?
There's the upper and the lower.
Okay, the upper and the lower. But
the
I don't.
Sides
okay.
And upper and lower. So that
okay, that's one shot. But the way the Mefarshim learned there was a corner. We look at the two sides of the corner. We looked at it in right angles, so there's a side going in one direction and a side going in a different direction. So we have four of those, and totally have eight. Correct? You have eight. So a corner means 1/8. Take four corners. Each corner has two sides. Multiply that by four, total of eight, and then take a pas. So this pasuk is telling us numbers, that who will survive the golus of Sanherif? 1/8 of the population. Where did they all go, the remainder? B'Damesek. They went to Damesek. Okay, he's quoting that Gemara, which quotes this Chazal. Now, we mentioned here in passing three different types of idols. We mentioned Sikus, Malkechem, Kiyun, Tzalmeichem, and Kechav Eloheichem. Hashem is criticizing Klal Yisrael. You love to worship idols? You can have your idols. When you go into exile, make sure you take them with you. Okay, Hashem is almost mocking us. And we learned that many Perushim, either is that the Goyim, they're going to force us to carry the idols with us. And we had different Perushim. What is Sikus? What is Kiyun? What is Koichav? Either it means they're just names of different idols, or we learn Sikus Haskes, it means to hearken. Malkechem doesn't necessarily mean king, it means Moilech. Kiyun can mean pastries, or it can mean, and the Koichav is the image of a star. Okay, we had different Perushim, but there is a Berg Talmud Chacham, we spent much time on his first Sefer that discussed the beauty of Lashon HaKodesh and Aramaic. He recently wrote a new Sefer on idolatry, and in the back there is an inside. There is basically like a dictionary, and I did not yet get a chance to get that far to read that part of the book. But our chaver Rabbeinu Michael Miller has gotten that far in the book, and he has going to tell us now some insight into these three idols.
Okay, so in this God list in the back, first of all, he's going to tell us some of the portion that we did learn, of course, because he did the research, and then add a bit more. Okay? So, Kiyun, sometimes spelled Kaiwan with a K, was an entity whose worship was criticized by Omos, in the pasuk that you just referenced. Rabbeinu Bachaya writes that this idol is mentioned twice more in Yirmiyahu. Okay? The Targum understands that Kiyun was the name of a foreign deity, while Rashi adds that it was identical to Sikus.
Identical, okay.
Yeah. However, Rav Moshe David Valley explains that Sikus and Kiyun made up a pair of male and female idols.
Ooh.
Sikus being the male and Kiyun being the female.
Wow.
Rav Stajik Gaon explains that Kiyun was another name for the planet Saturn.
We had that.
In Greek was known as Cronus. Rav Yosef Kimchi writes that Kiyun cannot be an idol's proper name because almost treats it grammatically as though it were in the plural form. Instead, he argues that Kiyun refers to the preparation, the kivein, right, of sacrifices for an unspecified deity. His son, the Radak, cites both of these views, right? We have that. Rabbeinu Bachaya combines the two opinions and writes that the word Kiyun is derived either from the word mechin, to prepare, and referred to a deity whose worship involved preparing foods and bringing them to the idol, or from the word kavanah, intent, and referred to the fact that its worshippers intently exerted much effort to assemble this idol. Some explain that Kiyun was the same as Rimon, which is cited elsewhere. Others identify Kiyun with Hibain Siva, a Hindu goddess, notoriously associated with promiscuity. Interestingly, when the Christian Bible cites the verse above from Amos, in their book Acts, it translates Kiyun as Rephan, a known Egyptian god. Okay. Kokhav was an entity whose worship was, again, criticized by Amos. Targum and Rashi understand that Kokhav was the name of a god, while Rav Yosef Karo explains that Kokhav, meaning star, is a general term for worship of any celestial body. Rav Stajik Gaon explains that Kokhav refers to worship of the astral force of Mercury, which is, right, the name of the planet Mercury, is Kokhav, known as Mazal Kokhav. And then it goes into the whole thing about Mercury and Marcolus, but that's not for now. Now, I wanted to mention Milcom, because we talked about that also, which was the chief Ammonite god. The Bible reports that in his old age, King Shlomo went after Milcom, the god of the Ammonites, and a few verses later they built a temple for Molech, the god of the Ammonites. Based on this, some commentators identify Milcom with Molech.
We learned that today, correct. Today, right. The Malbum.
A Yemenite Midrash, that's an interesting one, asserts that Milcom and Molech involved the worship of a specific planet, probably Saturn, which is also known as Kiyun.
Same thing as Kiyun.
Right. So there's a number of mentions of Malcom or Milcom in the various other places. Now, I want to get to Sikus. Sikus was the name of an idol, again, in Amos. Sikus might have been identical to Sukkos Benos, right?
We had that in the Malbum.
Although Rashi explains that Sikus and Kiyun were identical. Rav Moshe David Valley, we talked about that, the male and female idols. Rav Stajik Gaon said that Sikus worshipped the Mercury, although academic scholars contain that Sikus might have been related to other astral forces. Rav Yosef Karo explained that Sikus was related to the word Masecho, molten image. Rav Eliyahu
Fascinating. Sikus, Masecho. Wow. Okay.
Rav Eliyahu HaBachur suggests that the word Sikus was related to a similar sounding Latin word for a parrot, Psittacus, implying that Sikus was parrot-shaped. Okay? Almost rebuked the masses by calling God Sikus as Sikus your king at the Malcom, right? Radak explained that Almost used the term your king to deride idolatrous Jews for picking a star and making it their king instead of Hashem. Alternatively, Radak explains that Sikus worshippers viewed the idol as king of a pantheon of group of gods. Targum says that Sikus refers to the practice of receiving breads from idolatrous priests, similar to Catholic communion ceremony.
Ooh.
Yeah. Rav Yonah Ibn Janah explains that Sikus was not a proper name, but related to the word haskes, which we said. According to this, Amos rebukes the Jews for listening to and accepting upon themselves some unnamed form of idolatry. Similarly, Ibn Ezra says that Sikus refers to the Jews heeding the idolater's call for worship. Rosenberg explains that Sikus was not the name of the deity per se, but referred to a sukkah, built as a shrine for Molech. I just want to mention about Sukkos Benos, that they say that there are several things that, including in the Talmud, that the Benos refers to a hen. They had a hen-shaped idol, like a mother hen taking care of its young. And you see that in there are several references to that.
Okay, everybody said this concludes Perek Hey in Mitzvah. Tomorrow we begin Perek Vav.
Today is our friend of Aaron Akkadi's birthday. Beginning of the year.